beneath the soil, waiting to grow a little more. Let us pray. God, we find you on this gift of days, bringing us to the moment of looking at the growing, building of your creation. Amen. We hear the passage today that Lee so lovely read about the king settling in a house, and he's speaking of a palace. And it's hard to sometimes imagine palaces in our present society. We know about them far away, but so often we don't think of them just around the corner. It's hard to imagine Jarvis Street, once the home of great mansions, or we might call them palaces or Sherburn. But Joshi, on this very property, this McGill Square, this area between Queen and Shooter and Bond and Church Street, on the northwest corner, is what we call the manse. Now, the manse is a place where the minister is to live. And in about 1905, the masses, who were key members at the time, thought, well, the minister lives to live like we do, meaning we need to live in palaces or mansions, that so to speak. And so they built this very grand structure, stone very similar to Harthouse, if you take a closer look. And the idea at the time, I'm not sure exactly, but this is a bit of the mythology, that there was a chauffeur, a cook, and a butler. I'm not sure how much of that is true, but I'm sure there's a wee bit of truth to it. And if you, one day you'll get to enter it again when I arrive to Metropolitan. You could see the very formal dining room, the parlor, and wonderful carved heads, the busts that look something similar to you see at the Oakham House at Ryerson. The unusual part, you realize that this wonderful grand archway actually went to the bathroom, and which you know that you would not put a grand entranceway into the bathroom, so likely it was a front door at one time. But one day, perhaps in the not too distant future, we'll be able to see this grand place again. In our own home, it wasn't a palace, it was a bungalow, but we had many books that brought us a sense of what home could be. And Longfellow is one of them. It says, stay at home, my heart, and rest. Home keeping hearts and happiest. For those that wander, they know not where, are full of trouble and full of care. To stay at home is best. To weary and homesick and distressed, the wander east. They stay at home, my heart, and rest. The bird is safest in its nest. O'er all the flutter their wings and fly, a hawk is hovering in the sky. To stay at home is best. And for David and the people of Israel, they finally found a home as he settled into his house. But it's about that looking for and discovering what God is doing in their day and in our day. And Glenn Gould, in one of his great moments at the CBC, he was writing reflections on the idea of the North. And as we are a nation that is North, sometimes we forget that, there is more North than Toronto. There is a whole vast, immense nation, not only in our province, but further still in James Bay. But imagine this, the idea of the North is exploring that gift of solitude and the gift of condition of solitude. And we know that when we have an opportunity to go north, and suddenly we're surrounded by the trees and the birds all around us. Suddenly we're aware of this. It's as if we perhaps go to the valleys, even the river valleys of Toronto, and are suddenly aware that we're no longer near the tall buildings, we're near where water touches land, the great gift. See, that's the other part of house, is it not? The house builder, the great creation that God offers us. But further still, the king settled in his land, and we've come to a point where we have a whole other world, don't we? The world called the cyber house. And now for many, Google is the key direction they search, or perhaps Siri, when they have a question. The challenge is, if we only go to Google, we miss a moment, don't we? And I think before Google existed, we might have asked a friend, perhaps a grandmother, grandfather, an elder, and we would have heard a great narrative. But when we ask Google or Siri, we get a lot of information, but we don't always get the narrative of the road that information emerged. Don't get me wrong, I'm not an anti-technology person, but we miss the gift of those conversations. I guess I'm reminded by the great journey we're having of hearing the stories of those who've gone before us in Metropolitan. And it's not a wonder if you Google many names, you won't hear them, you won't find their their name mentioned in Google, but yet they're embedded in the heart and life of those who come to our church and come to our church family. There's questions we could ask them through the people we know, the great gift of their journey. For David, he had a question. He wanted to build something, but there is God saying, I will raise up for your offspring, and you'll have a home, and you have a home for nation and palace. But there's something about that. He wasn't satisfied, was he? For David, he wanted to take it further, and he wanted to build a temple. No, every age wants to build a temple, don't we? Well, look, we built the Cathedral of Methodism. But yet, God said, not yet. It's as if David was trying to tame the transcendence of God. And maybe sometimes we do that without even realizing. It's as if we can put the holy in a box and say, well, now you're here, and we have the key, and no one else can touch. But God said, not yet. Not now. Later. I will raise up for you an offspring that will sanctify. I will raise up for you an offspring that I will bring my spirit to. I will raise up with your offspring the gift of justification, the gift of relationship. I will raise up for your offspring that promise that breaks into the very day then and now through the heart and life and breath that we share. It's as if we hear for the first time these words, written by Maggie Smith. What is home but a book we write, then read again, each time, dog-earing, different pages in the morning, I wake to time to pencil the sun, how fragile it is world, I almost wrote. See, home is more than just where the heart is, it's what we do and breathe and the narrative we share, how we waken to the past, how we discover the gift of the present. When we find again that gift of home, we hear again the words of Paul's letter to the Ephesians, where we're referring to Christ. He is our peace. He is our peace for Jew and Gentile. You see, at the time, Jew and Gentile were at odds with each other. There's a great dividing wall between them. It's as if that letter was written today when we hear about the division between different parts of society, Eastern Canada, Western Canada, the suburbs of Toronto, the downtown core of Toronto, the different parties, the Liberals, Conservatives, NDP, the Green Party, the municipal election that's coming. Now we have 10, 15 different people running for each ward, all having different opinions, ready to be the Messiah for the moment, all having a platform of what it is to be better. Yet when we look at that dividing wall, not only between East and West, but between different cultures and places, God disturbs us. Because when we are disturbed, we're not satisfied with that dividing wall. We find Christ breaking in and helping us to remove that wall brick by brick, stone by stone, idea by idea. It's as if there's something that says, yes, no longer, no more. It's as if we embrace, as many authors speak about, the two magics. C.S. Lewis, in his tale, The Chronicles of Narnia, speaks about the older, more powerful magic when the lion Aslan is ready to lay down his life, that sacrificial love. Or further still, J.K. Rowling's, when there she's writing embedded in the whimsical tale of Harry Potter, we hear again and again of Harry being spared by the dark side. Why? Because of the love his mother had for him. One of the older, more powerful magics. The gift of God breaking into that day and our day, their world and our world. And God was breaking in the writers of the gospel when the disciples gathered and the apostles gathered, and there they were ready to return. Because they'd been sent out. Not sure what they were meant to do. And so often, we need to revisit the apostles, don't we? Because we can imagine for a moment, they had no concept that there was going to be cathedrals built in their name and we were going to create statues in their name or paintings. They were ready to risk all and bring the gift of compassion and caring. But there they are. And there is Christ, the compassionate shepherd, ready to risk all and be present to the people. There is Christ, the healer, ready to be at the other end of people who just wanted to touch and hear, receive the hem of his garment, knowing that something will happen, their lives are forever changed, not alone. It's as if we move from that moment where darkness is all around us. And Delina Cameron writes, "You may say fear is predictable emotion, and I might agree. When we have fear in our lives, it's as if we build a wall, as if we build indifference, as if we want to run away. Yet when we're ready to risk and reach out, something happens. When we're ready to be the person at the other end of that fear." A woman I received a phone call for this week I met with, she just received a diagnosis of being manic depressive. Still sorting out what that means, aware that parents don't understand. She's trying to sort out what it can be for her. Not so much wanting to take the medication, but wanting not to be alone and isolated. When we listen, when we hear, when we don't bring answers but bring the gift of ourselves, we build that bridge of home and health, a possibility. It's as if we go in that boat with Christ and become not strangers anymore, but people on the way. We become guests ready to build and grow. It's as if we hear these words, but there is the sense of forgetting fear for a moment and living in love and love and life. As Paul writes, he says, "There will no longer be stranger or alien. There'll only be gift." But it's when we find our voice. What makes a voice distinct is when our voice says, "I'm here with you. I'm ready to walk with you, ready to grow with you, ready to be with you." It's as if we reach out and hear the text saying, "The king is settled in his house, that I will be with you and your offspring, that Christ is our peace, that the apostles gathered, and that we were willing to cross over in that moment where we're not forgotten, where great gift opens and bridges of compassion and grace are discovered." It's as if we hear again that the king settled in his house, and we look what house means for all of us. CBC recently spoke about a series called The Ode to Kowloon. Kowloon is a city in China. And what it records is a person who visited Kowloon. Imagine Kowloon, and you have to take your imagination and travel over to Spadina, the part that's a bit older, that part that's north of Dundas. So the part that's south of Dundas has become gentrified, but the part that's very close where all the produce is in the sidewalk and the stores are very close together and you wander about. But the commentary is this. In Kowloon, they live very close together because they do. But they have to learn to work it out. And the commentator asked the question, so what is it in a North American context that we need so much space? And ask yourself this question. If you look on a real estate page, the new houses all have their own bathrooms per person. You have a walk-in closet. Everyone has their own television. The notion of sharing seems to be a far distant understanding. But when house is built, when home is built, without the notion of trying to be cooperative or compatible, it's as if we forget and isolate ourselves, not into solitude, but into fear of the other. Today, a great light, house builder. In our own tradition, 1818, people looked at the edge and took logs and made a cabin. 1832, they built what's on Adelaide, this magnificent Georgian style. Looks like a bit like a Greek temple, the Methodist mood. And here in 1872, despite all, you see, we were competing with the Catholics for this space. Imagine that. What would they have built? We were even competing with the city of Toronto. What would have been built here? What would have been built here was Old City Hall. So imagine Old City Hall here. You say, it wouldn't have fit, but they would have been slightly different. But somehow, in that day, in that era, we stood strong and stood tall and we built this edifice. But then in 1928, it all came crashing down because a kettle was left on the stove and fire burned and imploded. But then the church rebuilt and rebuilt and stayed in this neighborhood. We continue to rebuild this day as we clean the exterior, as we even put new steps on the outside. In our own denomination, the house is continuing to be built. And I'll share with you a wee bit of the more factual part. This week it's called General Council 2018. We're doing something called REMITS, Rebuilding the House of the United Church. And it says, we're looking at calls to the church, clusters and networks, final reports by the boundaries, indigenous remits, new funding models, office of the vocation, pastoral relations, remit of implementation roadmap, and the list goes on. United Church governance. But we need to look at perhaps the greatest remit of all, the relationships that we have with each other. Who are we? Not as a governance model on a piece of paper, but living flesh and blood. This week, there was the 100th anniversary of the birthday of Nelson Mandela, who didn't speak in 1999 to the World Council of Churches about doctrine and bureaucracy. He spoke these words. He says on the occasion, "No government or social agency can on its own meet the enormous challenges of development of our age. Partnerships are required across the broad range of society in drawing upon its spiritual and communal resources. Religion can be a powerful partner in such causes as poverty, alienation, the abuse of women and children, and the destructive disregard for our natural environment. We commend the Parliament, a gift of opening doors and being gift to each other." See, the house that we're building comes in people who speak in the words and understanding of Mandela, or Madiba, as some called it. It was only last Monday and Wednesday we heard the story and narrative of two people, Don Hambleton on Monday, one of our own. And we heard about his coming to Metropolitan, his relationship with Sheila, and many came and heard his story and his gift. And further still, a bit broader, one of our members, Ranga Robinson, brought a friend of hers to come to bring mourning and healing to the death of her husband, partner, Dr. James Jow. Some knew him as Jimmy. He was a doctor over at St. Michael's Hospital, a partner in our relationship. And in those circles, we discovered several moments. One of our members, Milana Dickinson, her son had gone to school with his son. And we realized that who we are as a church isn't just a building of stone, a plaster. It's a place of sanctuary and healing for the stranger in our midst. It's about knowing when to stop, when to listen, when to bring the moment of that kingdom being established and the sweetness of our stories, of knowing when the temple is ready to be grown. You see, the foundation we build is very important. When you look at the history of the ancient buildings of our society, Hagia Sophia, which was built in the 3rd century, is still standing. And you may ask, why? Well, there's these massive meter diameter stones, carved stones, that actually the whole church sits on, so when an earthquake hits it, it rolls a wee bit. How did they know that? And what did they bring, and what do we bring today to this gift of gathering and being God's people? You see, it's about hearing the king settling in his house. It's about knowing that we are not alone, about not only offspring of David, but our own offspring. You see, whether we have children or not is not the key point. It's about being connected through those wider circles of family and friends. It's about knowing that we are ambassadors of peace. It's about knowing that as the apostles were called, we are called today, about ready to risk and cross over and discover to be part of what might call the home team. And you see, I find it interesting in the city of Toronto, the home team. We root for the Jays, whether they win or lose. We root for the Maple Leafs. And there's something about, I call it the Toronto forgiveness factor, because we root for them even when they don't win, because we want to root for our own, because we know them, and we care for them, and we walk with them. When we discover who we are in the houses that we build, something happens, something takes form. It's as if we take off the armor bit by bit, and open our doors and discover the gift of who we can be and where it can go. It's as if we hear, again, the words of Morley Punchin, who writes, "God has been always working and evolving in his quiet power, from the seeming real, from the false, the true. Not for nothing blazed the martyr's fire, not for nothing the languish, the torture and trial of the past have been the stem and the plowshares in his service. now and whoever suspended the husbandry and made their long furrows. Miracles happen every day. A few weeks ago, I shared with you about a lunch. Well, miracles do happen. That lunch is taking place today in approximately 2 hours. And that lunch is a lunch with my brother, my sister-in-law, my sister and my brother-in-law, my partner and myself. That lunch that has taken 10 years to happen, 10 years to rebuild, to rediscover the gift of house, of home. We grew up in the same home. We became distant for a while, but miracles do happen when God breaks in, when we and all of us listen to the home that is built brick by brick, stone by stone, grace by grace, life by life, today.